Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly. This is the High Hopes Podcast. High Hopes. It's a bunch of baseball nerds talking about the Phillies on Odyssey and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
It is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast presented by Miller Lite. Another Miller Lite for Phil's wins. Playoff, Jack, we just get to the playoffs and all of a sudden we just start winning games now. Not the easiest of wins today, but let me just start off, and we'll obviously dive in it all, but let me just start off by saying, I told you we wanted Nick Castellanos here, Jack. Take your Schwarber and Castellanos poll and shove it. Never doubted Nick Castellanos. I never regretted my very, very, very strong stance that they had to go out and get him. And it was as much for his defense as his offense. That's what I've always talked about, Jack. How about it, buddy? Nick Castellanos not just coming through with big freaking hits, making the defensive play of the playoffs.
Season of the last 10 years.
Unbelievable. I thought there was no chance. No chance as he was running for that ball, Jack. Everyone on Twitter's like, how is Dalton Guthrie not in? How is Dalton Guthrie not in? Like, man, how freaking about it, Fritzy?
You know, it's a shame we're only going to have 10 more of these, buddy. 10 more. 10 more celebration podcasts as we go on our way to the World Series. James, I never lied to the High Hopes people. And I try to lead them in a path that I think is correct and noble. And as I open this podcast today, I think it's fair to say that we have something special on our hands. Like, we have what, first off, we've been waiting forever for some good, competent playoff baseball. But I think there might be more here, James. I don't think this run's just going to end in the NLDS. They went out and they played good, crisp, solid, great baseball for, you know, 9 innings until the thing. And the Brogdon
bullpen stuff. Everyone else was fine. Yeah. Just a few pitchers in the pen, we got some issues.
Yeah, but for the most part, I mean, I felt again like I wasn't watching the same team for the first, like, 4 or 5 innings when they got the 6-1 lead. I was like, this isn't the same team. They're playing small ball. They're getting clutch hits of 2 outs. They get 2 outs. They string together like 4 straight hits. Again, I felt like, what am I watching?
Other team is the team leaving runners on base instead of us.
Yep. And it comes down to Nick Castellanos in that moment making that play. And I just, we talk about this a lot. We talk about, you know, when you kind of realize that you might have something here. The Castellanos play and ending that game is the first time where it's like, we might have something here. We might have something here.
Yeah, and honestly, I've been feeling it over the Cardinals series too. And what it is for me, it's the vibes with this team. It's the culture. It's the, I don't think we realize, you know, kind of through the season, and because you don't get that like glimpse into the locker room. You only see what happens during the games, and we saw some of it, but I don't think we realize like how close this group is and how much they love each other. And, you know, we're seeing the, you know, just this kind of electric thing with all of them. And it's me, like, you know, Ranger wearing a Castellanos shirt after the game, you know, Boehm doing, he's my favorite player. Like, you know, like these guys, like, it seems like they really do like each other. And I don't think we kind of realize just how close they were. And I think, you know, getting in the way they did has galvanized them, and winning that Cardinals series has galvanized them. And we talk so much on here about how baseball is a game of confidence. It's about believing you're going to go out there and beat the guy you're going. I mean, it's the most mono a mono sport there is. It's you versus a pitcher or a pitcher versus you, and that's it. It's like, go. And this team is brimming with confidence right now. And obviously there's some, you know, bullpen questions, and I, you know, we can question how Topper managed the bullpen. I had some questions about that, but I mean, Jack, to your point, it does feel like there's a real special kind of energy, it's an electricity, so to speak, with this team, where it does feel like, and I think it goes back to that ninth inning in St. Louis, where it was like, oh man, you know, we can do anything. And now it's everyone's coming through. I mean, like, it seems like everyone's already had a moment practically, you know, outside of a couple guys.
Yeah, and you're starting to see them realize the potential that we all saw in them heading into the season. Like, they haven't played their best baseball yet. And you know, the games they won out in St. Louis, I said to you on that podcast, like, I've seen them lose that game a million times, both those games, but they came through and they came up in clutch moments. And when you start believing, James, and when you start believing in each other, and you talk about connectivity, like what Sirianni, I know this is an Eagles thing, but like Sirianni preaches connectivity and preaches, you know, getting to know each other. That Eagles team is really close. And what made the last couple of years so tough on the Phillies, it felt like they weren't pulling for each other. And it felt like they weren't, you know, all one team. They weren't all together. You'd hear stories of, like, you know, not everyone being on the same page. And this team is the complete opposite. Everyone seems to get along really well. They're dancing the clubhouse. And when you have the moments like they've had, you know, where you're celebrating Houston, you celebrate after the Cardinals series, you become really close. And you start thinking that you could do things that you didn't think were possible. And they went down to Atlanta today, a place that has been a house of horrors for them. And they went out and, for the most part, dominated. Besides the ninth inning, they got a little bit hairy, but got very hairy, actually.
It's funny because I texted Jack, like, I want to say in like the sixth inning or seventh inning, whenever it became 7-3. And I was like, has a 7-3 ever felt more like a one-run lead as you're watching it? And ultimately, it ended up being a one-run lead, you know? And it was like, man, you know, it just was like, of course. And we have to talk about the maybe bullpen roles. I think we might need a mix up. Yeah. Sir Anthony was unbelievable. Yes. Like, arguably the best he's looked all season in that outing. It was, I mean, unhittable, especially in the spot coming in that first inning, facing the top of the lineup, then just mowing down the 4, 5, 6 guys, like, no freaking problem. Alvarado continues to be phenomenal. By the way, did you see his quote? Potentially the quote of the season, the quote of the year, maybe the quote of many years, his quote, and as Alex Coffey tweeted this out, but he was talking to the Braves dugout, and he said, hey, everybody thinks I want to attack Alvarado, but right now, no one can change my mentality. Nobody. I'm focused. When we come into the game, I come to hit the target. I don't care who's hitting. Ready for this? Strike one, strike two, and good luck. Like, dude, like, these two guys, it has to be Alvarado and Sir Anthony at the end of the game. Whatever order you want, I don't care. I feel like I trust either of those guys an equal amount right now. But, like, I mean, you just have to take Eflin out of that role. You have to.
You do. And, you know, I've got the job done. You know. And,
yeah, buddy, no doubt.
Yep. And like we've always said, you know, home runs are rally killers. So shout out to Matt Olson for hitting the home run.
Good point. And a nice little single there. Who knows what happens?
Exactly right. I mean, that keeps the rally alive. So good job by Matt Olson hitting the ball at the ballpark like a total loser.
Jack, honestly, no difference between that home run and a home run when you're down 13-1 to make it 13-4. I mean, literally same outcome.
Well, some are saying that Matt Olson's simply a stat batter at this point, you know, more of a me guy. Eflin, listen, it was admirable, you know, the whole idea that he could be a closer, whatever. Like, just say, give me 99 if you're going to be a closer. You know, he's a middle reliever. I mean, let him just be what he is. He doesn't have overwhelming stuff. I mean, he's still a pitch to contact guy. His fastball's already down to like what, 93 today, 92. You know,
yeah, there was no movement to it, man.
Yeah,
it looked like he was just serving it up there.
Well, this is what happens when, I mean, he's not used to pitching on back to back days or I'm shocked.
He's a freaking starter. You know, I mean, you're absolutely right. And both Alvarado and Sir Anthony have closed games before. They both know what it's like to pitch multiple days in a row. I mean, this just seems like, and to your point, I love it. It was a great story. We talked about it. We waxed poetic about having Eflin, Nola starting the clincher and him closing out. And then, you know, Eflin closing out the first series win. Like, it's poetic. It's awesome. But, you know, you also got to win. And he's just not as good as those other two guys.
Well,
and playoff closing matters too much.
Right. I can't believe what Sir Anthony's done in his last two games. It is.
Oh my goodness.
It is absurd. And today was like, okay, welcome back, sir. Like, it's been a while. And it's funny. I think LA told the story of, like, I guess Dave Lundquist was talking to him in the bullpen, maybe before the St. Louis start or St. Louis outing or at some point, and was like, "Are you okay?" And Sir Anthony's like, "Yeah, I'm fine." And he's like, "Well, what do you think's going on?" And Sir Anthony's like, "I don't know, whatever." And Lundquist is like, "Just go out and throw strikes. Like, just go out and throw strikes. Let yourself do the talking." And, like, ever since then, like, these last two outings has been, this is what we expected when he came back. And he's been utterly, utterly dominant. So if you're getting this Sir Anthony with the Alvarado, I mean, I know the Robertson to a, you know, the calf strain.
I was going to get there. I mean, and look, you know, I guess when you're that age, you that happens. But jumping during
he's
the
younger than
over,
you, so, I mean.
He is younger than me. That's fair. But you know what? I'm not a professional baseball player, Jack. I'm a professional sit on my couch and watch those guys and then talk
about it. Well, that's fair. But would you strain your calf from jumping up and down?
Honestly, dude, I wake up every day and I will do things during the day where I will do the most benign thing. And it'll be like, "Oh, why is my groin hurt? That's weird. I didn't really do anything." Yes, that happens. Mm. Like, that's what happens as you get older. I'm serious.
I just think that A-Rod's calling him the most flexible player in the league.
Oh, my God. I didn't think about it. It's A-Rod's fault.
It's A-Rod's fault.
Oh, my God. Of course it is. Jack, what a great point by you.
It's always
it is 100%
A-Rod. It's always A-Rod's fault.
Yeah.
But, yes, Eflin can be a middle reliever. You can take the Progden role or whatever. Take the 6th, 7th or whatever. But the back in the bullpen, I want guys back there that can throw Ched and can come in and give me 98 to 100. Give me stuff over a location, whatever. And honestly, you know, we talk about mentality and the mentality of being able to close out games. Well, I think Sir Anthony proved that in St. Louis first. I mean, you know, going through Arenado and Goldschmidt in that situation that he did was massive. And then again today, I mean, that's two innings of pure dominance in big playoff games. So you want to talk about, the mentality changes in the ninth. I get it. But also his mentality has been pretty good in big high leverage situations, the last two games. So, the problem is, James, is I don't know what happens tomorrow because he pitched.
Well, that's literally, all right. I'm happy you said this. Let me get in this. Cause it's literally my next question to you. Cause he only threw 18 pitches, but you know, hasn't been used much on multiple, you know, 3 days in a row, all type of stuff. You've got Wheeler, you got Noah going the next 2 days. So obviously you're hoping these guys can go deep for you, give you good starts, but you know, it's honestly, I mean, Nick Nelson, right? That's the first guy off the bench in the bullpen, so to speak, tomorrow. I mean, we're in a bad spot with Alvarado. I mean, a righty. Alvarado pitches. I mean, you can't trust Brogdon. Pilati can probably go again, but you're talking about multiple days in a row. I guess you have the off day after that. But, you know, if you get in trouble tomorrow, Nick Nelson, and think about it, I mean, Nick Nelson was the guy they would have had to bring in the ninth. If Eflin gets into trouble there, like, which he did, you know, can't get out of it, is my point. Allows another two base runners or something, and you're like, all right, who do we go to close out the game? It's Nick Nelson there. That was my biggest issue with today, and you can lead it into talking about tomorrow as well. But my biggest issue with today was I understand at first I didn't understand why he didn't bring Syndergaard or Gibson in right away when he took Suarez out. But I understand the concept of wanting them to come in a clean inning, so I can understand trying to get out of that inning and what he had to do there. But how do you start the next inning with Brogdon? Like, bring Syndergaard in there. You know, why are these guys on the roster, Jack? What? And again, maybe Falter, whoever's not starting game four. And I feel like it's going to be Falter, but whoever's not starting game four, like, why are Gibson and Syndergaard on this roster if you're coming at the top of the fourth inning and need a new pitcher and you can't put one of those two guys in the game? Like, instead, you kind of mix and match throughout the game, use up all your freaking relievers, and then you're in a situation where they got lucky. They really did. Like, who comes in? It's Eflin. If Eflin can't finish that out in some way, you're bringing in Nick Nelson, Syndergaard, or Gibson to try and finish that out.
You don't think that's a good scenario?
What are we doing here? You got lucky with that. So what do you think of the way Topper managed that, and then, like, what it means kind of for the next couple games?
Well, I like that he went for the kill. You know what I mean? Like, I know it's tough. I understand that. But at this point, you have a chance to steal a game on the road in Atlanta. Like, use your guys that have been relievers before. I think those guys are here for almost mop-up duty. Or Syndergaard, I probably would have used today and see what he's given you. Like, definitely over Brogdon. I mean, Brogdon's
been horrible lately. Like, we love Connor Brogdon. Like, he's our dude. But he, like, it's been a month since he's looked good. Like, it was so clear not to put him in there. I mean, on the midday show today, the question came up, who do you trust more, Bilotti or Brogdon right now? I was like, Bilotti by mile. Like, I was like, it's just what it is right now, you know?
Yeah, and just doesn't look confident out there either, which is, you know, hopefully we can. It's not the right spot for him to bring him in on the road in Atlanta. Like that's not a good decision to make at this point. But you know, I probably would have used Syndergaard there. But the problem with tomorrow, you know, I think that if they have a lead heading into the ninth, I'm using Sir Anthony. Like you have a chance to go
100%.
You have a chance to go for a kill. I mean, you go up 2-0 before you come back to Philadelphia. I know that he pitched two innings. It was also just 18 pitches. I know
it was 18 pitches.
I know there's warm-ups involved in there. I know he pitched on, was it Saturday in St. Louis? I understand that, but you have a chance to go for a kill in Atlanta. You got to take advantage of it. So I would use, hopefully, in a perfect world, Wheeler goes 7 tomorrow, and then you can go Alvarado, Sir Anthony for the 9th. If you're down by more than 2, then I would, you know, use Bilotti again, use Nick Nelson, those kind of guys.
Nick Nelson, that spot. I agree. Yeah, it's a good point. And look, I think I'm with you. I would go for the kill tomorrow. Like, if you can get the kill, go for it. And look, hopefully Wheeler just goes out and deals and look Kyle Wright.
Dude, they stole game 1 in Atlanta, man.
Exactly.
With you Ranger just Suarez on the mound.
They already did it. They already did it. They already got you one in Atlanta, Jack.
With Ranger Suarez on the mound, who gave him 4 innings. They went down there and they stole game 1 in Atlanta. And
yeah, we didn't even give him 4.
Yeah, 3 and whatever. We have a chance, James. We have a chance to go up 2-0 tomorrow before a potential closeout game Friday at Citizens Bank Park. I mean, is there anything more beautiful than that in the entire world?
With Jack Fritz in attendance for the first time in his life at a Phillies playoff game.
With Mr. October on the mound. So
it's a great point.
It is. I'm trying not to get too ahead of myself. I'm trying not to get too ahead of myself. But there's something brewing here, man. There is something brewing here that a lot of people didn't think was going to happen. There was a lot of, playoffs this, playoff that. Oh, they're going to lose to the Cardinals. I don't know, man. This is a big payroll with a lot of talent, with Casty getting hot, with Bricey getting hot, with Sir Anthony getting hot, with Wheeler and Nola pitching well in the postseason. You don't want to play the Phils right now, man. Like, it's as simple as that. You do not want to play the Phils, and what a time to be alive.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, look, we've been wrong, you know, many times
nope.
In the history of this podcast. Yes, maybe. You know, I think from time to time we've gotten something wrong, but something we were definitely right about was the Phillies going in without the pressure. Like, you could tell as soon as they clinch, they look like a completely different baseball team, the way they've played, the way they've gone about their business, the vibe, like we talked about. Like, I really do think that drought was weighing on him in September. I think they felt it, man. Like, I really do. Because, you know, once that collapse ended, it was kind of like, all right, like, now let's just go out and play baseball. And they've looked like such a better team. And look, I want to get into Bryce and Cassie and all that, but just in point of, like, you know, kind of today and out when another, you know, they just have dudes who contribute. We've talked about the lineup being so great, the bottom of the lineup being so great, the guys we trust the most. Another one, Edmundo Sosa.
Edmundo!
Again today, Edmundo! What a fun name, first and foremost. What an amazing trade, by the way. What a name trade, right? Jojo Romero for Edmundo Sosa. Like, not many one-for-one name trades get much better than that. But, like, I love Jojo. We all love Jojo, but he was not a factor on this team. And they got a guy who's, like, a difference maker in the playoffs for them, Jack. Like, this dude is a winning baseball player, and he makes plays. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that we always talk about. It's such a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. The teams that win it all and the teams that get far in the playoffs have dudes like Edmundo Sosa who make big plays in big moments and are not the heralded guys, but they're just baseball players who get it done.
Yeah, and his defense was great today. Made the clinching play, of course, but, you know, he had the big double early in the game, and then he got the sac fly home, and that's something, you know, for the last month, James, like, you and I, mostly me, have been tweeting and on this podcast about, like, stop playing losing baseball, because if you haven't realized by this point that, like, playoff baseball is completely different than regular season baseball, it's been so obvious. And it's little things in the playoffs that add up when it comes to winning and affecting the outcome of games. And getting sac flies home and getting runners home from third base and getting runners in from second base, runners in scoring position. And you know, I know that Schwarber tried to bunt today. That was a disaster.
Yeah, don't do that, guys. Yeah. Schwarber, Harper, like, you know, I know what you're doing, Bryce, but, and I know it's against Max Fried and you guys are, you know, tough lefty, all that, but like, no, I'd rather you strike out than attempt to bunt and pop it out or whatever.
But it's the little things that they are doing right now that is making this feel even better. It's the little Amuno Sosa plays. The obviously the Castellanos big play late. Vierling getting to the ball.
That Matt Vierling play, that'll get lost, Jack, because of the Castellanos play. That'll be the one that we talk about. But that Matt Vierling catch on what was it, Grissom or Harris or whatever, who smoked that ball. Yeah, like Harris. Yeah, he smoked it, and Vierling got an unbelievable jump on it and just kind of had to hop at the last minute and extend. But, you know, that was a really impressive play.
Yeah, and they look locked in. You know, they look locked in. And we talk about, you know, having the weight was lifted off their shoulders when they made the playoffs. Like, good take by us. I mean, talk about nailing one. but also on the Braves side, like, a reason why I liked them today was it was a day game. They had been off for 5 days. It's hard to have the same kind of intensity. You know, the tomahawk chop doesn't hit the same when it's not dark out and they don't get the flashlights going and all of that. Like, it's not the same. It's not the same
feel. I can't believe it's still there for what it's worth, but yes.
Whatever, yeah. But it's like that was a good spot for them to do that. And the Braves, like, they did win a World Series last year. Like, they got over the hump. Like, does this team still have this? Is good. This is a mistake. I'm not going to say it.
I mean, especially when they pointed out, Jack, and this is freaking unbelievable, and I think it's the exact right thing to say after you just said what you said and almost said what you said. The stat they showed during the broadcast that the Braves did not get swept in a series this year. The first time in Major League Baseball in 18 years that has happened for a team is unfreaking believable. They did not get swept this year. Think about the Phillies got swept by the freaking Rangers twice.
Cubs,
the Diamondbacks, like, oh, the Cubs, like, whatever, like, all these horrendous things, like, you know, like, so, like, that's a really impressive stat. It would be really, really dumb to think that because of how today went, especially because they almost lost again, that the Braves are just going to, like, oh, that's it. Braves are awesome. They were the best team in baseball from, like, June forward, and they did not get swept in a series this year. Yeah.
The one thing that I'm worried about heading into tomorrow, well, I mean, obviously more than one thing, but the one thing is that it feels like when a team scores a bunch of runs in the ninth that it carries over to the next day. Especially in series, in playoff series, it's like, oh, we got them and we had them on the ropes and we came out. And, you know, I kind of feel like that they're going to be more ready to go tomorrow. And that's why, you know, it's nice having wheels on the mound to hopefully combat that. But yeah, I'm not going to say what I wanted to say because I know it's going to come back to bite me. Potentially come back to bite me. So I'm not going to say it, but it was a good day to get game one. That's a fact.
Yeah. And look, just getting game one is massive. And, you know, John Smoltz misspoke a little bit when he said at the beginning of the broadcast, you know, I always say game one is the most important game of a 5-game series. It's like, yes, John.
Yes, John.
Unless there's a game 5, obviously, then that is the most important one of the series. But I get your point. And look, the numbers do trend, especially a game one winner on the road. I mean, they are statistically in a very good spot, but, you know, we when does that stop the Phillies from you know, not coming through?
That's like saying that the most important pitch in baseball is strike one. Like, yeah,
I know.
Really?
It's like, thanks, John. And for what it's worth, like, I thought Smoltz was terrific. I think him and Joe Davis are I want to try and get the appropriate number and not be hyperbolic with this, but I want to, like, make sure it's, like, accurate and right. Somewhere in the neighborhood of a billion times better than Michael Kay and A-Rod, if I had to put a number on it. I thought Smoltz was terrific today, but that was definitely kind of missed on that one.
Well, it was
but,
watchable. I mean, it was like A-Rod,
yeah,
and Michael Kay.
I thought it was interesting. I learned stuff. I thought it was interesting when he was talking about the mound stuff. I thought it was fascinating talking about, like, the runner at third when Acuna was down there and how that affects a pitcher. When he was talking about the shadows at different times of the day and, you know, waiting towards later in the day to see what it's like for tomorrow. Like,
hold on.
I just thought he had a lot of good points.
Hold on. You don't get the same kind of knowledge when you listen to me talk baseball? I mean, we talk baseball almost every day. You know, you don't feel as enlightened.
Dude, this is such a you thing. I was comparing him to A-Rod, and you have to be like, but what about me? Yeah. And my baseball knowledge. Like, yeah. You weren't a part of the conversation. Like, what do you have to do with this?
Well, you know, you wax him poetically about, you know, John Smoltz.
I thought he did a good job.
Well, I was listening to Fransky in LA, so.
Well, as you should be. Yeah. We've been over this. I'm streaming, and thus I can't pause it and sync it up. Thanks, buddy. It's awesome. Watching this Fransky call online of the freaking Cassianos catch.
His call of the Cassianos catch is incredible.
Magical. What a call.
Incredible. Listen, I was watching the first couple innings at a buddy of mine. I was just like, yeah, Smoltz is doing a pretty good job. So, but Fransky in LA coming in clutch here at the end was awesome. Although I was watching here, and I was in the studio because I just wanted to be secluded. Because I don't like watching with people. And I had the feed before the TV, so like I was, which is tough, but it was worth it. We got a win out of it. And we survived.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. All right, I want to quickly Cassianos again. He's looked good, you know, offensively a little bit better, seems a little more comfortable at the plate. And again, that play defensively. I said at the beginning of the playoffs, and obviously I said, I want this guy here and you're welcome. Mm-hmm. But I said at the beginning of the playoffs that he had a really unique opportunity in front of him in that he is someone who had a miserably disappointing year after signing a big contract and coming to Philly. But he had this amazing opportunity in front of him where if he could just come through in the playoffs and help them make a run and be a part of something fun and give us new highlights, Jack, which I am like getting really excited about the potential for all these that we have now already and the more to come. But that, you know, he can kind of completely change his narrative here as, you know, most, you know, people will love him if he comes through in the playoffs after spending an entire year being like, you know, this loser.
Yeah, I mean, he can definitely change it around, and it was a good start today. You know, people are going to remember the Cassianos catch more than they remember anything he did in the season besides, like, maybe the Salisbury thing. And having that moment, and honestly, at the plate, a vintage Cassianos single to make it 6-1, you know, that's the kind of hitter that I thought they were getting. I was shocked the double got as far as it did, you know?
Yeah, it seemed like balls were carrying. It seemed like the Olsen one, too. If you... Like, it seemed like every outfielder day was kind of like looking at the ball and being like, oh, I guess that's going further than I thought it was. You know, it happened a few times.
Yeah, 100%. So, if you get, again, you know, if you get Bryce back, who I think looked like really good today, and that should have been a
home run. Well, that was going to be my next question.
But if you get both of those guys back at the same time, I mean, that's just, it's such a game changer. And you get the Cassianos that we've seen again for the last decade. Like, Cassianos has been one of the best hitters in baseball for a long time, and he just has not been that guy this year. I mean, like, Veerling and there was that stat when he went out that the right fielders were more productive than him, and it was like Dalton Guthrie and Veerling and whatever. You know, getting the version of Cassianos that we've seen for a while at this point would just, it's insane and almost like a cheat code in a way. So, like, I couldn't be more thrilled. I mean, because I wanted Schwarber, but, like, I thought there was no shot they were getting Cassianos. And the fact that they came through and got him and it was so disappointing, for them to get this version now is such a game changer. It makes the line, like, now it's not like, oh my gosh, we got to the fifth spot in the lineup and it's Cassianos and these next two batters are going to be shaky before we get to the daycare. Like, now a pitcher's got to think, hold on, I got to go through, well, Schwarber and Reese have been shaky. And then we have to go to get through JT, and then you got to go to the Cassianos or Harper and Cassianos and to Bohm. Like, it just lengthens the lineup if he is the Cassianos that we've seen for a while.
Oh my God, it completely changes everything, dude. It changes absolutely everything. You know, the lineup is a completely different thing, especially because we keep talking about the fact that it's been, you know, Bohm, Veerling, Segura, Stott. You know, those are the guys that have really been coming through for this team and have already made a difference. And Sosa have made a difference in the playoffs, made a difference in the regular season. Like, and if you can actually have the big dudes make a difference too, then it's like, man, literally the sky is the limit for this baseball team. If that kind of stuff starts happening, to your point, Schwarber and Hoskins have been terrible. What if one of those guys gets going? And Hoskins, I thought, had a, you know, at least his best day in a little while, you know, had the double, hit a couple balls hard, I thought, you know, But it is such a massive difference if Castellanos can bring this. And like we talked about at the top of the pod, I mean, confidence breeds confidence. The more he has these moments, the more he has these new spots where he comes through, the more confident he's going to be going up there. You know, it's like, remember when we were at that, the bar in Levittown and Shaq Gleason's in Levittown, great place. And we had a bunch of people come watch a game with us and it was awesome. And also Milt Thompson was there and we were talking to Milt Thompson about that, you know, whatever it was, quarter of the season stretch where he batted over 500 for 50 games. Where he was just like talking about what it's like to see the baseball when you're that confident and you're that locked in. He's like, Jack was like, it's like a beach ball. He's like, yeah, man. He's like, it was really like a beach ball. Like he was like, it's seriously, like that's the thing. And, you know, the more Castellanos, I mean, because again, Castellanos is whatever he is. If he's never the 309, 34 homer guy from last year, like that could certainly be possible. I think he has a real chance to be back to that guy next year and the playoffs. Who knows what happens? But like, he's certainly not as bad as he was this year. Like, there's no chance he just became that horrible a hitter like overnight like that. Essentially, there's so many other factors that can make sense. So like for him to get to the playoffs and to really kind of turn and have a change, it's believable is my point.
Well, and he seems like a confidence guy too. Like he seems like a confidence guy when he gets rolling, he can kind of get hot here. And honestly, for the first time all year, he looked intimidating at the plate. I was like, oh, this is the guy that I thought I was watching.
Totally.
Because you know? back in Cincinnati or Chicago before that, I was like, oh, he always gets the big hit. Like he's the guy that's always going to have that backbreaking hit. And having that hit today to make it, you know, 6-1, it was like, that's the Nick Castellanos that I've watched for a while. So he finally looked intimidating for the first time in all season. So
it's a great point, Jack. It was the first time those last couple times he came to the plate, it was the first time, and it was such a weird feeling because I was like, I'm actually not expecting you to blow this. Like, I expect you to do something here. And that was like a strange feeling, Jack.
Another sign this team's different, buddy. Another sign that things are starting to turn. Nicky Castellanos coming around at the right time. And another dynamite post-game presser, too. You know, they asked him, they were like, what'd you do when he caught the ball? He's like, I saw it, I went after it, and I caught it. So, yep. You know, he's got his swagger Bring back. It. He's got his swagger back for sure.
Thank God. And again, that catch, like you said, you know, it will go down. We will all remember it is the play of the postseason so far. I think the Gene hit and that catch are probably the two plays we'll remember most as of, you know, so far. And it's kind of thing where if they go a long way, it could really be a special moment that we look back on and be like, wow, remember that play? Because I feel fully confident that if that drops, it's at least a double, maybe a triple, and they certainly don't hold on to the lead because we know how that was trending. Just a total changing play. And let's get to it, that you've alluded to it multiple times, but man, today and really since the home run in St. Louis, the best Bryce Harper we've seen since he's back from the injury, Jack. Like, he looks, again, talk about someone who looks just way more confident at the plate right now.
100%. And it was the hit in the first inning. You know, I was texting with Franzen, and he was like, Bryce. And I was like, dude, I know. Like, he smoked the ball the other way, and it's like, that's the guy when he is going right is thinking opposite way. Reese is the same way, a couple guys are the same way, but those two, if they're on plane and they are thinking right center or left center field for Bryce, if they are thinking up the middle, like that's when you see the best version of those guys. And yeah, when you get a hanger from Miles Michaelis, you can deposit it 429 feet or whatever. But in this instance, it's like Bryce goes opposite way in the first and then goes opposite way later in the game, and he looked like the Bryce Harper we'd seen for a while. And frankly, I didn't know if we were going to get that guy back this postseason. It kind of felt like they were going to have to go out there and you just hope that Bryce can get it going, but I wasn't sure he's going to get it going. But now that you add that into the mix with Castellanos into the mix, you're still waiting for Hoskins and Schwarber. The bottom of the lineup still does their thing. Bohm even looks way better now. And Bohm was pretty good heading into the postseason. But Bohm now, it's like this is the sac fly was like easy, done, game over. You're starting to see this team reach their potential. And they weren't going to do it without the MVP being the MVP. And he looks like the MVP again.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's the single biggest thing that could have happened for this team coming into the postseason. It's funny, you know, if you could have said, all right, I need two guys to get Castellanos a bonus. I need two guys to get back to who they are for the postseason, you would have said Bryson Sir Anthony. Because you're like, all right, those are the two guys who are playing so as far away from what they should be and are the most important, you know, in terms of the delta from the two. And it, you know, today it certainly looked like they are both back. And that is like you said, just, you know, there's really nothing that could be better for this team. And to your point, it's why it feels like there's something special brewing. And, you know, look, we've said it a million times, but we say it because it's true. It just really matters if you're the hottest team or the best team right now. And we've seen it happen so many times that we're playing the team that happened last year. That was an 88-win team. An 88-win team. They went on to be like, what, 108-win Dodger team or 105-win Dodger team or whatever in the playoffs. Like, that stuff happens. They rolled. They rolled because they had that swag and they had Jock Peterson wearing pearls and talking about us being those bleeping dudes or whatever the hell he said. Like, you know, like you felt it with that team, and I hate them. I hate them. That's what's so fun about playing them again, Jack, in the playoffs. The first time since 93, I hate them so much, and they keep flashing their freaking extensions that they sign. It's like, this Austin Riley mortgaged his future of the Braves. Spencer Strider mortgaged his future of the Braves. Ronald Acuna fired his agent because he mortgaged his future. Ozzie, it's like, what is going, do they, like, we've talked about this, but how does this happen, and how do they just bring guys up, and now it's like Michael Harris. Like, this dude's a freaking stud. What the hell is this? Why do they have these guys? It is, I hate them. I hate them so much, Jack. And there's nothing I want more in this world than to kick their asses out of the playoffs as the quote-unquote reigning champ. And they are the reigning champ, but I'm going to call it
Mickey Mouse. It's still Mickey Mouse.
Exactly.
100%
exactly.
Mickey Mouse. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I'm really fired.
I tell you what.
I can't believe it.
You started saying, hold on.
Jack, real quick, so I mean, we've never recorded a high old pot after a playoff loss. This is crazy.
I know. And only 10 more. But, I mean, are you starting to, smell it? Smell it? Team of Destiny? Against the team of Destiny vibes from this Phils team? Who would have ever thought?
You're damn right I am, buddy. Like, without a doubt.
Who would have ever thought that we are the team of Destiny? Yeah, I've seen team of Destinies. I've seen other teams be the Eagles are team of Destiny. Let's have a little Phils run. Might have
Could
a little
be.
Bit
Could
of a
be.
Phils
now,
run here.
I'm watching on my second TV right now a team from the other coast that's definitely got a vibe going, too. Yeah, Phillies Mariners World Series.
Oh,
like, can
the
you
Mariners.
Imagine would the world explode? Would the world explode? The Mariners,
the Mariners stink.
The Mariners are the only team that have never been in the World Series. The only franchise that have never been in the World Series, which is pretty crazy.
Sounds miserable.
I know.
Can't
it really
relate.
Is.
Can't relate.
It really is. All right.
Jared Kelenic has two hits for them today. It might really be the Mariners' year.
Yeah, they jumped on him early, too. All right. Let me go through my notes. I think I know. By the way, I thought I deleted my notes at the very beginning of the pod because I was like so excited as I was doing that open. And I looked and I thought my notes were gone and I couldn't find them. And then I found them. So, you know, the vibes are good everywhere because I've got tons of stuff, but I think we got to almost all of it. And I know we're going to get to take back in a sec. Let me see if there's anything else I want to get to before then. By the way, Nick Castellanos, you're welcome for wanting him here. I just want to make sure that was out there. How about Ranger getting through two bases loaded jams early without them getting any runs from? Not fun, but I'll take it. I think that's all. And how about Bowman Vierling wearing the daycare shirts before the game? Like, just of the vibes. All right, what do you got in?
Yeah, I mean, the vibes are very high. The Rob Thompson extension, I think, honestly, was a good timing for it. You know, it gets them even more excited. And the stories of them, like, hugging Tomper, and you know, it was cool.
How about just them all tweeting? Like, there were guys I didn't even know had Twitter accounts were tweeting out about Tomper. Like, every single one was like, and I mean, geez, the quotes, Jack. Like, obviously, the takeaway is like, oh, yeah, they really like Tomper. But the big takeaway is, like, they bleeping hated Joe Girardi. Like, oh my God. Like it's not even veiled. It's like, well, we just love the Tomper, really lets us be ourselves. And, you know, it's basically like, you know, all this, basically they make it seem like he was running like a fascist organization or something. He was like a dictator or something. It's crazy, Jack.
Yeah. And I think it was Wheeler said something the other day. Like, again, there's another quote about the young guys being able to come up and just, you know, be themselves and go out there and have fun. Like, maybe there's a reason why these talented guys came up and, like, were not good as soon as they reached the major leagues. You know, I mean, like, it was so many over the last couple of years. They'd come up, they'd be hot for a week, and then they'd be terrible. You know, like the perfect example is Ronald Torres last year. It's like he's playing over Alec Bohm, a guy that you drafted to be a cornerstone. And this year, you know, them able to do this, they definitely did not like Joe Girardi. I do want to talk about Ranger. Like, it's too straight. You know, he was pretty good. He was pretty good in the Braves starts, that, and I was like, okay, this is fine. But man, the Astros start, obviously, now that was tough because he's coming off the celebration. But today, again, like, just looks like he's all over the place. Not good command for a guy that is a command guy. Looked like he's kind of rushing to the plate a little bit. Just never found the arm slot. And I don't know what happens. Like, if they do get to the NLDS or get to the NLCS, you know, who is it? It depends what Falter does in game. It depends what Falter does in game four here.
Right. Seeing if it goes five, but I guess they could bring Wheeler back on short rest potentially, but like theoretically you would have thought Ranger starts game five, but now it's like, you know.
Yeah. So it's definitely, I would have liked to leave today's start feeling better about Ranger, and obviously we just don't. Now maybe, you know, first playoff start jitters, and he's on the road, and there's a lot of momentum behind the team, and he doesn't want to be the guy that screws that up. You know, and he still does have the ability to go out in any start and give them seven innings of shutout baseball. But it's going to be something to monitor. Like, if Falter comes out and dominates Saturday in a game four, if we even need to get to a game four, that would be one thing. But you know, it was definitely a little bit cause for concern if they do make the NLCS. Like, this Ranger, you almost had to put him out there, but it wasn't a great start from that standpoint.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And you have to put him out there, certainly for at least one more playoff start. But yeah, it was ugly, man. I mean, he couldn't throw strikes really until Sir Anthony came in the game. It was like no Phillies pitcher could throw strikes. It was wild.
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, it was just straight up awful. There was nothing worse. It was two straight innings where they made it 4-1 and then they made it 6-1, and immediately the inning was started off with a walk. It's like, are you guys kidding me? Like, I don't want to do the whole, you know, old man yell at a cloud thing or whatever, but like, you're up by 6 runs or you're up by 4 runs. Like, come in and throw strikes. Like, come in, do your job, throw strikes. You're a big leaker. Let's act like it. So there's a little bit of that today, but the fact that Sir Anthony again, you know, went locked down and Jose Alvarado were locked down, that is more important than, you know, the pitchers that probably won't be pitching in high leverage spots going out there and not being great.
Yeah, 100% agree.
All right. I don't really have, like, I mean, we've pretty much touched on a lot of things.
Yeah, there's not a lot of time to, like, bust out for the take back, because it's like we just talk about everything now. It's such a weird format. We're not used to this.
No,
Jack.
We're not.
This is only our third one.
I know. But I guess last thing in the take bag, even though it wasn't really a big take bag at all today, is that, dude, Friday night at Citizens Bank Park, I don't know how they would do it, but have you seen... You know Charlie Blackman, right? Like his walk-up
baseball
song.
Baseball player?
Yes, obviously you know him. But
yeah.
Like,
you know, he asked the question, like, what? Of course I know Charlie.
But you know
Blackman.
His walk-up song where, like, I forget what
you
it
should
is.
Have said, do you know who Charlie Blackman's walk-up song?
Do you know? But you know what I'm talking about, in Colorado, like, the walk-up song is going and then it, like, cuts off and the whole crowd sings behind it. Do you know what they...
Yeah, this sounds vaguely familiar, but I can't place it, but it sounds vaguely familiar.
I mean, Dancing on My Own has this same ability to do that at Citizens Bank Park on Friday, where the whole crowd is singing Dancing
yeah,
on My
it's
Own.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
And
idea.
We got to find some way to do it, man. Because like, it would have one of those moments where you look back and you're like, it would send you chills. Like, I don't want to start producing the Phil's Video Yearbook, but I feel like I could at this point. Like, I know what would work. I know what wouldn't work. Like, having the whole crowd singing Dancing on My Own... Like, as someone's coming up to bat, or as, like, the Phils win, or whatever, like, it would be a magical, magical moment that everyone in the stands, I'm pretty sure, would just start weeping, and the players in the field would be going crazy. I'm just saying, we got to find some way to do it. I know it's a quick turnaround, because this is a song that no one knew about until Monday, I think, in Houston, or, you know, maybe even just Saturday in St. Louis, but... I mean, it's got some potential here. It's got some potential of this team's song. The city's all behind it, and I need it to be worked into the mix in Citizens Bank Park on Friday night.
Okay, so I want to preface this by saying I love everything about what you said.
Thank you.
I think that type of moment would be magical. I'm right there with you. I love any kind of, like, you know, real crowd participation where it's, you know, choreographed and thought out.
Well, there's no one better than that than Philadelphia, too. I mean,
yeah,
we're the best,
exactly.
We're best
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I just wish the song didn't suck so much. Like, that's what.
Well, you listened to the wrong version. Didn't you play the Robin version today?
No. No. I played the original Calum Scott version or whatever, and then I played the Tiesto remix because everyone let me know, and both are trash. I have not heard the Robin version, but I would bet the Robin version is light years better than that one, I'm sure, because Robin's pretty good. But, like, either way, the song sucks. And yeah, maybe Robin's version is good, but all I know is the version the Phillies are using, which, trust me, 8,000 people let me know on Twitter on the Midday Show, is the Calum Scott Tiesto remix version. Is we don't curse on this pod. It's dog bleep, that song.
No,
it is trash.
But
it
it's something that everyone can easily sing along to, and that's what makes it special. You know, Sweet Caroline's also a bad song, but you know what happens is that everyone comes together and sings
Sweet
it.
Sweet Caroline
in perfect
is
harmony.
Light years better than that.
That's
song.
Fine.
And I'm not even a huge Sweet Caroline fan. It's 10,000 times the song that one is. I'm just saying.
But
these are just facts.
It doesn't matter when it talks about vibes and singing together. I mean, Don't Stop Believing is a terrible
song. I agree with you.
No,
that point holds. You are correct. It could be, I mean, people sing fight songs. Like, and you know, obviously we have some good ones here, but they're not all fight songs are good. There's dumb stuff that people sing together. I mean, come on. You know, all that matters is the group effort of it. I agree with you. It's a great idea and I fully support it. I just wish the song didn't suck. That's my take.
Well, we had the perfect song and then they traded Mickey. So that's on the Phils. But we survive and we move on, and this team is special, and you know, we had talked a lot about this team being different, and it's nice that they actually are different. They're playing different baseball. They're playing winning baseball, and they believe, buddy, they believe that they can go into any place and win. And it's so weird after the decade that we've been through here of just losing baseball to see them do this. It's just fascinating. They've almost flipped a switch, James, where they're like, you know what, we are pretty good and we can do some damage. And it's just so weird having that confidence in your team again and seeing the city just fall for them. You know, like, seeing the city get behind a baseball team is so special. And they're becoming our guys more and more as the days go on here. You know, I mean, obviously we don't want to have Flynn in the closer position anymore. That's fine. We could use Reese and Schwarber getting hot at the top of the lineup. That'd be great. But they're winning baseball games. They're playing smart baseball. They are having fun. You know, Mundo Sosa feels like, you know, there's a photo of him doing something funny every single game. So, you know, they are developing in front of our eyes. And I can't wait for tomorrow to see what they do.
Yeah. Who'd have thunk that the, you know, best baseball we ever saw the Phillies play during the history of this podcast would be the three postseason games that they played when we finally got there.
Yeah, all expected.
I mean, what are the odds? I mean, it's especially after playing like crap for the majority of September and barely getting anyone excited for the playoffs. Like, I mean, they've been awesome. And to your point, like you said, for the first two, I'll throw this one into it too, is, you know, we had a 7-1 loss earlier this season. Let us not forget. And as they mentioned on the broadcast, the Phillies had two games of 7-run leads that they blew this year. Like, it feels like we lose all three of these games, you know, over the last, you know, the history of this podcast, we lose all three of those games. And like, in the history of this podcast, whenever we have a podcast to record, it's always like, oh, they lose it to make the pod more depressing than it should be when things are good. Like, they just keep feeling different, Jack. This whole thing so far feels different. And it's team of destiny, buddy.
Now, win tomorrow.
Pretty awesome. Now, win tomorrow. I need Zach Wheeler to go out and shove. I mean, you need Zach Wheeler to shove tomorrow after what happened today with the bullpen. Like, you desperately need Zach to bring it tomorrow. It is a massive, massive game.
Give me a shutout. Give me a shutout on the road.
Yeah, complete game shutout. You know what? Be the new Roy Halladay. Throw a perfect game instead of throwing a no-hitter. I mean, that's fair, right?
We could end it. End it tomorrow. Step on a throat. Make it 2-0. Come back to Friday night at Citizens Bank Park for the first time in a decade and have a party. It could be a party on Friday night.
I love it so much. I'm so freaking happy. All right. You got any final thoughts, Fritzy?
Man, waiting for 4:37 tomorrow is going to be absolutely excruciating. Every year, I figure out something that is going to be important and going to be my superstition. You know, we talk about 08. I had the perfect spot, perfect chair, and we got
same
into rhythm.
Same thing with the Eagles run. I remember you had to have that one spot in the studio.
Yep.
I remember all this stuff.
A perfect spot. Well,
Yes, you are very weird about all this.
I'm just saying, the Darren Dalton jersey is 3-0,
and oh, buddy,
and doing a pregame vibe check video, seeing where everyone's at. It's a perfect 3-0. So we ride tomorrow.
You could say recording a playoff game after recording a high hopes pot after a playoff game is a perfect 3-0 at this point.
Yep. And saying hi to James every day. That's also 3-0. So,
you're right.
But don't change anything. It's important right now. I don't care if you haven't showered or whatever. Yeah, it's too important right now. You're gonna have to stink for a little bit. Whatever it takes at this point. So the Darren Dalton jersey will be on tomorrow, as I expect to do another post-playoff game win podcast.
Yeah, and you're involved tomorrow. I mean, you're part of the team tomorrow.
I know.
You know,
very
producing
excited.
The game, big guy, big game.
Well, they know it's a big game. Yeah,
the biggest game of your life is the biggest game of your life.
Well, again, exactly. They're calling in the right guy to produce the game, because as someone that never lost a high school playoff game, I know a thing or two about winning big games. Point. So. Yeah. They know, they decided it was, my third game I've produced all year. It comes in the postseason. Some guys step up, some guys don't. And I'm here to step up tomorrow.
I just think Fransky and LA needed you.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
That's what I think it is. You know, they were like, you know what? Come on, guys. We need Jack. You know, LA's traveling. The least Jack could do is come in and, sit down and bring it for us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Road LA. Well, I'm very proud of them for going out there and gutting it out on the road.
It's pretty cool, man. It's pretty exciting, and it makes it all that much more magical and all that type of stuff. All right, we'll be back tomorrow at some point. Again, aforementioned, Jack has to produce the game, so it might be a later night pod than normal or whatever, but obviously we'll be back. And, man, this is awesome. Like, this is really, really, really awesome right now, Jack. This is really, really awesome. He's worth himself.